Well, there are a lot of concerns from a lot of different stakeholders, people involved in the criminal justice system, about these serious changes to sentencing and parole and reforming the system. Your office has been talking to these groups and their concerns. Are you guys at a stalemate right now? Is the bill wrapped up, or are more changes still being discussed?
Well, the bill is close. Right now, we see two areas where there is still discussion going on and some disagreement. One is the area that's gotten a lot of publicity about 120 days and parole. What this is a section of the criminal code where right now we're sending a lot of people away for drug possession. And typically they end up spending around 7 months in jail. And what the proposal would do under the bill is reduce that time behind bars to 120 days if they act right and take the right steps. And then after that, they'd go to ankle monitoring for the rest of their term. Well, that's a way that we could get rid of hundreds of currently occupied beds for nonviolent drug offenders and save those beds for more violent crimes. That same section of the code also includes a number of other crimes that don't send a whole lot of people to jail right now, but look really bad to people who, you know, are just seeing this from the outside. Crimes like negligent homicide and some battery crimes. Since that doesn't really drive many people into the prison system, we think it's going to be pretty easy to cut those out, set aside those crimes, keep them at their current levels, and just do the 120 days for these simple possession crimes, which is the goal of this, because those are one of the significant drivers sending people to prison right now.
Laws can be very subject to interpretation, Matt, and there's often discretion given in many aspects of the criminal justice system to allow prosecutors and judges to kind of consider different factors. Does the governor think that the changes to the bill allow discretion to take place appropriately?
We do. We don't think that the bill tampers with discretion. What it does do to a degree is shift the burden more toward what the prosecutors have to prove rather than what the defendants have to disprove. And that gets into kind of the second area where there is still some disagreement. And this is much more of a philosophical area of disagreement where when it comes down to it, we may just have to agree to disagree. On methamphetamine crimes especially, which is where we're hearing a lot of the concern and feedback from prosecutors, right now, the burden is very heavily placed on the defendant to disprove. In other words, as an example, under current law, if you have over 1/5 of a gram of methamphetamine in your possession, then it is presumed, and they are able to immediately add the crime of intent to deliver that. We're looking to move that number, which shifts that burden of proof. The prosecutor still has the discretion to make that charge. It's just a higher level before they're able to simply presume the intent to deliver, and they otherwise have to prove that intent, whereas right now it's a very low bar, and that's what's adding to the number of criminals that we're sending away for longer periods of time for nonviolent crimes.
Matt, do you worry that may be perceived as being soft on crime?
Well, we knew going into it that was going to be how a lot of these reforms were going to be painted. And we've said since the beginning that the effort of this bill is not to be soft on crime, but to be smart on crime. And we're seeing our prison population grow over the years. We've seen it escalate, and we see it continuing to escalate for the next 10 years to the point where we're going to have to spend over $1 billion of additional taxpayer money. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to raise a bunch of taxes, and we don't want to cut a bunch of criminals loose. So you have to look for the areas within the current law where you can try to bend that curve and soften that growth and make it more manageable. And the area where we see a big drive of people into the prison system or returning to the prison system that we want to attack is in these nonviolent crimes and especially drug crimes.
At the heart of this matter is an effort to free up bed space in prisons for violent and serious offenders in order to save money, as we've discussed. Take these less threatening criminals out of prison beds, find alternative sentencing for them. How many or what percentage of high security beds do you think are currently holding lower level offenders right now? How much space do you think we can free up? Is it 10%, 20%, 60%?
Well, a number that the working group working with the Pew Foundation found during this year-long review of our prison statistics, I think one of the most telling numbers, that we've currently got a little over about 17,000 people in the prison system. In 2009, 1,200 of the admissions into the prisons were for nonviolent crimes of the very type that we're looking to address. So you could see a pretty good turnaround begin if you pass these laws and if you pass them at the right levels. It's going to be a matter of degree over time and seeing how things go for the first couple of years. This, of course, the reforms we see now does not preclude additional reforms down the line. And if, in fact, we're ever going to fully zero the growth, we're going to have to look at what works and then, you know, maybe take additional steps in that direction. But what we want to do out of the gate is address some of these nonviolent crimes, especially these possession crimes, where we can still punish people and appropriately punish people, but do so in alternative methods that keep those beds free while also preventing us from having to raise a bunch of taxes.
Well, why doesn't the governor just use some of his executive powers for commutations, for example, to reduce sentencing for folks that he deems not to be threatening to the public? If this bill fails or if it's changed too dramatically, might he do that?
That's not something he's been looking at doing right now at all. I mean, that I think would talk a lot more to the concerns you speak about discretion for prosecutors and judges if you have the governor then stepping in and meddling with those sentences directly, especially after they've been issued. The governor, throughout his time in office, has been very much about giving people a second chance after they've served their time. We've issued hundreds of pardons for people who have gone all the way through all the terms of their sentence. They've cleared their record. They've done everything they've supposed to do. They've had to do. And then they've been showing a couple of years of good behavior even beyond that. In those cases, he's glad to give them a pardon and clear their record and give them a second chance. He's done exactly one commutation now in his first 4 years in office, and that's not an area where he looks to take a lot of action. He has a very obviously high standard for that. So we don't think that's the direction that we want to go or anyone wants us to go. That's why we want to address this up front and avoid these increased costs that we're going to see continuing to ramp up for years to come, that where while we have money, say, in this year's budget, it's not going to be long before we're facing some pretty tough decisions about, again, either higher taxes or cutting back services, which in this case would mean just having to let more people out.
Matt, is it possible that we cannot reduce the prison overpopulation enough without posing some risk to society?
I think you have to look at every individual case on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, can we say absolutely that every person that gets a reduced sentence or a different form of sentence that they're never going to do anything bad? Of course we can't. But on the flip side of that, I think you have to be ready and willing to stand up and face a lot of the fear that's being put out there and a lot of the fear that I think just creeps up every time you talk about criminal justice issues. There are other states, especially Kansas and Texas, two states that have histories of not being at all soft on crime, that have recognized this need and taken similar actions. And they've seen some positive results. And part of this, yes, is keeping people out of prison beds by changing the sentencing grid. The other part of this is looking at the communities and seeing what can be done to prevent recidivism, to prevent a lot of people from getting into bad situations in the first place, to make actually the public safer and to make our communities safer. And at the end of the day, that's really the biggest goal of this reform, is to make our communities safer.